Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Inside the Game, episode 84. I'm DJ Weed, joined, as always, by three lovely members of EG to make this Inside the EG, brought to you by Gentleman Weed. And our sponsors, Monster Energy, Kingston Hyper, X-Razor, and Astro. What's up, boys? What's up?
Hello.
Well.
Hi.
Gentleman Weed.
Gentleman Jeff, we meet again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Once more.
This time, you won't get away so easily. Suppy. Sup.
Gentleman Suppy, excuse you.
Gentleman Suppy, I'll get to you in a second.
Audacity of the show.
Gentleman, does Zeno get gentleman? Does he officially? Gentleman Zeno Cider, hello.
Yay.
How are you?
Great.
Great. What's up? How you been this week?
I recently found out that exercising is like the best thing ever. Like, because before I was like, I have to get tired to exercise, so I would be tired for the rest of the day. I didn't want to do anything. But now I found out that if you exercise, you actually get more energy and less stress. It's fucking amazing.
Do you go to a public school, Zeno?
Yeah.
Need I ask anything else?
What do you say? I mean, public school has PE and gym and.
No, I'm just saying that their education system is failing the youth of our country. Like.
So he's 16, like,
16
right.
years old, and he's like, I just discovered exercise is good for you. And it's like,
listen up, you 12-year-old pricks. I want you to take 8 laps around this gym, and when you're done, we're going to play some dodgeball. I could spend this time telling you the benefits of exercising and how it might give you much energy, but I'm going to sit over here and read the Omaha World Herald. That kind of like that? That's public schools?
Mm-hmm.
So how can you do the gym teacher from the private school so that I haven't? Because I went to public schools. Jeff, I'm hoping you can.
Oh, I went to public school up through high school. And at high school, obviously you learned that I was more making a joke than anything. I don't really want to talk too much about public schools.
Okay. All right. Well, congratulations, Zeno Cider, for a great discovery. Great discovery. Suppy. Seen any good movies lately?
Oh, God. No, of course not.
Oh, I watched some anime. No.
Yeah!
I think we need you to watch another classic. If I throw another classic out, would you watch it? Would you? You got, like, Netflix access, right?
I'd consider it.
Okay. Have you ever seen the movie Short Circuit, Suppy? Oh, yes.
Of course.
Nailed
it. Is it a horror movie?
It's not a horror movie. It's a feel-good movie about a robot that comes alive, Suppy, and it'll blow your fucking mind, man. You will be like, oh, my God, how have I never seen Short Circuit before?
Is it a horror movie?
Is it a horror movie? Look, the chat's going crazy.
Johnny Five,
man. I'm telling you, dude. You report back next week, Suppy. That's your ITG homework. You will be like, you guys, Short Circuit was amazing. Who is this Steve Guttenberg guy? He's like unbelievable. That's because
I will write it in my notes right now.
but in all
seriousness, you would actually like it, Suppy. It's actually adorable.
I'm totally serious. It's awesome. Blow your mind. Yeah. Okay, Suppy. But seriously, how's your week been?
Pretty good. I'm glad to be finally back. It's been a long time since being on Inside the Game. I wasn't able to make it last week because I had my freaking WCS match that was scheduled on Inside the Game again, which sucked, and I didn't qualify. But other than that, I mean, yeah, pretty good week other than not qualifying.
Okay. Jeff? Hello, gentlemen. Jeff.
Hello. What did I do this past weekend? I watched the Seahawks win, which was awesome. I went to a Astro retail store opening party.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
I went to an Astro retail party. It was great.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Anyways.
I guess I was more curious about the store itself.
The party was amazing. The store itself is pretty incredible. This is actually right next to their actual offices. And I don't have the address off the top of my head, but I'm sure it's posted locally. So if you're in the SF area, you should go check it out. Really cool. Of course, Astro Gear is awesome, but the people that run Astro are really gaming-oriented and cool people. So it'd be a pretty fun place to visit. Outside of that, not much. Pretty boring weekend for me. I did a lot of D&D, which is cool for me, but maybe not. That's not everyone's bag. I watched a lot of StarCraft and played a lot of StarCraft, so I'm excited to talk about it today because there are some good topics that popped up. Not that that's a segue, it's just that's what I'm excited about.
I think that was a fantastic segue, Jeff. I'm going to run with it. So let's go ahead and let's start hitting the topics for episode 84. You got a few things, and then, of course, we'll jump into WCS because that's our ongoing competition we're focusing on. We'll have plenty of time, I believe, tonight that we'll open up the phone lines for some fun and shenanigans. First and foremost, and, you know, I guess I put this out there because I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on it. Like, does it resonate with each of you and sort of where it's at? Does it – well, let me just explain what it is. Basically, Blizzard kind of targets students and creates this StarCraft campaign, if you will, that adds new portraits, double XP, sort of free-to-play unlocked because you get – you know, all the races are unlocked even for the starter edition. It's like 50% off or 45% off one of the versions. I mean, they basically are like, yo, we're going to kind of celebrate going back to school with a bunch of StarCraft.
Which is funny.
So, right. I mean,
I think they would do the opposite. Like when summer break starts, this shit would hit the hat. Not like, now that you're loaded up on school, free video game!
Fuck you, Blizzard. I can't do shit about it. Fuck you.
So, as I was thinking about it, I kind of, like, a few thoughts came to mind. Exactly that, Jeff. The thought of, like, well, this is at least one, you know, they're making an effort to try to put more cosmetic stuff in the games that might get people playing. You get these achievements by just, like, playing games. But is there conflict there in the fact that it is, like, back to school? Do you think it matters? Like, is this a cool promotion? What do you guys
think? I was mostly joking. I mean, obviously, there are going to be some people out there that are getting, like, their doctorate degree or their doctorate degree. And that's a joke. Anyways, they're very bogged down in school, and, of course, this does kind of fly in their face. But mostly, I think the highlight for this is that it's really cool that they're doing this. And this is something that people have been talking about for a while, and they've definitely dabbled in the past. And I hope they continue to do, even at a higher frequency, because let's be honest, at this point in time, they couldn't possibly imagine selling more, like, a significant number of Heart of the Swarm units through just traditional, like, there's not going to be a wave of people somewhere that are like, we all haven't bought HOTS. Let's all 10,000 of us go buy it now because we just randomly came across that. Like, they need to change things up. So I like the idea of basically a free-to-play Heart of the Swarm for 1 month, a significant chunk of time. I think that's really cool. It opens up the game entirely. And that's how you're going to sell it. People come in, they're like, well, you know, whatever, fuck it, I'll give it a shot. And then they're 1 month invested into it, and they're like, I actually really enjoy that, and I was starting to get pretty good. Now I'll go pick up the game. Like, they need to do that more often. And maybe it's not for an entire month, but maybe it's every other month, which seems outlandish, basically making the game free to play. But there's the nice little thing where you actually have to connect your friends to it, or those people have to go out and look for websites that are distributing codes or something like that. But they have to – there's a little bit of legwork as opposed to just, like, clicking a link – that's, like, advertised locally, and now you have Heart of the Swarm. So there's a little bit of connectivity that way, a little bit of work, and I think that's awesome. The portrait thing, they need to do that 10 times more, and they could be so much more creative with this. You could do something like 5 times straight Grandmaster, here's a portrait you get. Like make it more top-end, make it low-end, make it, like, Forever Bronze fucking advertising. Like, make a Forever Silver one. Like, they're funny, but at the same time, like,
it's like, if you've been in Bronze down for 9 seasons, you get this. It's like, hey, at least it's unique to them, right?
Or the Bronze Breaker. I mean, I could sit here and spitball this forever, and hopefully what I'm saying is there's a room of people that are doing the same thing, because this shit is gold. You can print this. You can absolutely print it. And, of course, there's Blizzard programmer technicians are like, no, that takes hours of serious man labor, and right now we're working on All-Stars. And it's like, yeah, I understand that. But, like, you've invested so much into StarCraft II, and this is relatively low on the manpower and on the cost to bring in great things and spruce up this game. And that's what this initiative means. So I don't mean to sound like a do more of this, because this, you know, like, I don't want to be the forever ungrateful person under Blizzard, but what I would tell you is that this is an awesome thing. It's great, and my hope is they continue to do more of it, and they they broaden the scope. It's not just like a holiday thing that happens once in a blue moon, but rather they just slam out avatars and they put up incentive and maybe they sell them. The microtransaction shit can come in there too. I just wish they would do more of it.
Passionate about that subject, Suffy or Zeno?
Yeah, I don't really know what else to say. Like, I think Jeff put it really, really well, and I think it's definitely a really good initiative, gets more people active, and makes the community more, you know, the community likes this kind of stuff. So it's just giving more stuff to the people who play StarCraft and makes them want to keep playing. So I think we should just continue doing it.
I feel like the EXP thing kind of fell short in StarCraft 2. Like, I see, like, Blizzard's going in the right direction with trying to motivate people to play more, not just from the game, but also from, like, other external factors. But I feel like this subject is where we really need to take a page from League of Legends' book, because I know, like, so many people that play League of Legends just because they want the win of the day, basically. So the first, like, win you get per day, you get 200 or 300 bonus IP, which is like a currency they use. And what my friends end up doing is like they play five games when they only intended to play one. And I don't know, it seems that League of Legends is really good at motivating people to keep playing. So I think it's really good that StarCraft 2 is heading in that direction. But yeah, maybe like Jeff said, we probably need to refine it more, add some more stuff.
Yeah, and they've done a few more of these promotions since Heart of the Swarm is launched, so I don't know if it's like, you know, the new Battle.net gave them the capabilities to do that, but I kind of got to agree with Jeff. Like, the frequency of it, to see it increase would be nice, whether it be holiday or, you know, you kind of look at it the same way they supported World of Warcraft, right? I mean, like, things were slower to get some content out in that regard, but you kind of hope Blizzard would go that route. You know, like, shit, I don't know, like fucking pumpkin baneling avatar, whatever.
Sure.
You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, someone else in the marketing department can do all that stuff. But you know, it's just interesting where they've chosen to actually run these promotions, and then, you know, where they'll continue to run it in the future.
And good on them for doing this. Yeah. I mean, like the joke about, you know, school started and they're celebrating this, but I like that there's a theme to it, that the avatars are goofy as shit. Rainer has never looked weirder than in that
right.
hipster-ass black and white picture. Like, that's so funny.
They also went the education. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that I like that they're still thinking about these things and they're rolling them out. And hopefully the right people or person is listening and they do much, much more of this, because I think one of the themes you can glean from what we've all said, and I'm sure this is not an original thought from us, this is something that people have been saying for a while, Blizzard, our wallets, our eyes, our need, our attention is literally dripping with the sweet sensual tension of need and want for your ideas. Like, if you put out more avatars, more badass ones, a glowing one, a fucking moving one, Kerrigan as a man, you know, Pimigan, Jimigan, a Jerrigan, I don't know, just shit like that, man, like cool stuff. People will, and they're like $5 for this avatar. Boom! $100,000 instantly. You know, like, ridiculous shit like that. And it's not that you need to nickel and dime this community. Certainly you do not. But maybe you don't go that route. Maybe you just release avatars for accomplishments, but it drives people towards doing different things, which is what they've already done. They already have avatars for accomplishments. But more. Update it. Change it. Like, even speaking from my own personal perspective, I'm a level 30 Protoss.
You're terrible.
That's it.
You're so
That's
terrible.
The end of
God.
It. Make it You're open the doors. Make it Protoss. 60. Make it 90 and shit.
Well, you can be 90. You're just too
Across
much of a bitch
races.
To leave Protoss, aren't you? No.
Nope. I play the other races too. I'm just my point is you can update this stuff and open it, and it doesn't. And it's like it's not intensive at all, but it creates objectives for people. Like, we joke because there's three pro gamers on this panel, but there's people that aren't pro gamers, but they really do like those avatars. They really do like the sense of accomplishment of, whoa, I won five games in a row, and I unlocked an avatar. Like, that's kind of cool to them. And that's their goal. That's their competition. So continue to update that so there's renewed interest for people that aren't pursuing top 10 GM or some shit like that. Like, give them something to play for and continue to do this.
Yeah, good point. Any final thoughts?
I was just going to say, if they did increase the level cap to, like, 60 instead of 30 per race, I bet, like, immediately there's going to be threads on Reddit, like, oh, thank you, Blizzard, like, Blizzard cares so much about the community, and like for a week, people would be really, really good about, and like it would just bring some positivity to the scene that desperately needs it. So I think it would be really good.
I would pay $5 just to have my client unlock like really, truly extreme physics. Where, you know, like when a baneling impacted a marine, it would actually just send them flying up into space, like beyond even the scope of the camera. I mean, they could nickel and dime the shit out of me in that game. They just, yeah.
Yeah.
Said it before, so. All right, well, you know, people are in the, well, maybe they should work on improving the game. Well, that's actually one area that they've been spending at least a lot of time thinking about, not necessarily implementing a whole lot of stuff, but this does mean that a lot of testing has gone out. And I actually can't wait to talk about these considered balance changes with you guys. There are, I believe, four balance changes that... Six that they are talking about posting into a test map. So, again, we should probably preface this with, all right, guys, it doesn't mean it's going in the game. We're kind of talking about it hypothetically, but it's fun to talk about what happens if it does come in the game. So that's
and they're
kind
talking
of
about after November is worth mentioning as well. But the idea behind these would be after BlizzCon, which is a long time. Well, I mean, 2 months, but a long time.
Right. All right, so I think Met Ground and Air Attack upgrades combined is something they've been talking about for a while. I think we've talked a lot on the show about it. Xenocider, if you want to throw out any comments on this one, I think I don't know if we've heard your thoughts specifically on this.
I think it's decent for mech. I don't know. It's not really that useful, I think, to be honest. That's it.
Okay. Well, number two is Widowmine splash damage radius decreased from 1.75 to 1.1.
Well, hang on. But, I mean, I think there's more to be said about the first one than just okay. Levo saying, that seems good. And, Jesus.
Go for it, Jeff.
Yes, thank you. There's been a lot of discussion around this, and I feel like one of the, you know, there's huge discussion on Reddit, huge discussion on Team Liquid, and a lot of people have very strong opinions about this. I think this whole patch in general is really funny because it's like extremely controversial. A lot of the changes they're looking at aren't incredibly big. It's not like they're not gigantic, but they're two units that are very controversial. So that's the general gist of it. But this first one, mech, air, and ground, what this essentially means that if that did go through, if you upgrade mech, you are upgrading all mech, Vikings in the air, battle cruisers and tanks and everything else on the ground. So I think that's a really interesting way to look at that. I personally think it's subtle enough that, and it is a buff. It's definitely a buff because if you're upgrading ground, but it also hits air, your Vikings get better. Like from the Protoss perspective, it's good against Colossus. But then if I'm in the back of my head, like, well, you know, it's helping my ground. Maybe I'll squeeze out four or five tanks, because in the past I wouldn't, because they're not scaling. They're not, well, they scale okay because their splash damage is just great anyways. But perhaps that little extra incentive makes me start to do more things like that. Or if I shied away from adding Hellbats to my army composition, but now with these upgrades, because you need those upgrades for your Vikings. Like, you just have to do that if they're going Colossus. You don't just not upgrade your Vikings. But if now you're also upgrading your mech, there's a little extra incentive to perhaps change up your composition. And I think that's the kind of buff that I can really get behind, because it shouldn't just be, it increases air and ground and also gives them the FU missiles that shoots out of their ass, and it just fucking does 25 damage every time you upgrade it. Like, that would be ridiculous, obviously. But a little subtle upgrade difference that then gives that encouragement to then add those to your armor and composition, I think goes a long ways. And we don't see mech as much in TVP or TVZ, but with that little bit extra of incentive, we'll definitely see experimentation with it if it did go through. But I feel like situationally, too, I'm looking at like the 45-minute games where all of a sudden you're like adding more Thors, more tanks to your army composition. The Terran has a more of an opportunity to switch to it without that period of time where they have to up their upgrades, because those units are irrelevant for like that chunk of 5 minutes or whatever it is.
So I guess I would say why now? You know, in that they've talked about this for such a long time. You know, you even talk about how it could, you know, change the mindset of how people might go, the metagame, if you will. What do you think? Is it in combination with these other
Yeah, it would have to go through. Yeah, the tank one is, that we're going to talk about in a few moments here, too, is really important. Because I don't think it's just the upgrade that would then change it. I really don't. I don't think people are like, well, fucking finally. Now question. I can go. I can go mech. I agree with you. I don't think that's the case.
Okay. Okay. Any comments on what Jeff said? I mean, I agree with him. It makes sense.
Yeah, it does actually. I think the thing is, in the past with StarCraft 2 is like, there's been this really small buff. And then people are like, huh, maybe that'll do something. So they experiment and then they find out something that was good all along, but they just never did it anyways. So that might be an added benefit. But what I've always, or what I've thought for a long time about this mech ground and air attack upgrades is that it actually kind of benefits the, or at least in TVT, I'm not talking about the other matchups, but since Bio wants to transition into air really fast off of like 4 to 5 tanks pretty much versus mech, the transition is going to be a lot easier because they're already going to have 3-3 BCs because that's technically what you do. You get 3 starports and then they don't have any anti-air. They have like 2 Thors and you have like 4 BCs. And then so having the air attacks already when you've transitioned actually favors the bio more so because the mech and air attack is just about the transition itself. It isn't really about, you know, like it's not really a buff directly to mech attack or anything. So... And bio is the one that really wants to transition in BCs less so than mech does. So, yeah, that's...
How come?
Because mech, if you just, like, get a critical mass of Ravens, you don't actually really need the attack upgrade. Like, when you have... You already have, like, such a huge damage ground army that BCs would kind of really never be, like, a priority. I mean, you don't need any more damage from the sky. And Ravens
would
are just...
Would you think, then, that that's a good thing, that Bio gets that buff and not necessarily the mech-style TVT? Because Bio, in that late-game composition, they're still just counterattacking. They don't really have the ability to straight-up fight. But with 3-3 Battlecruisers coming out, all of a sudden that high DPS ground army with the critical mass of Ravens needs to see that coming to adjust appropriately, right? Whereas in the past, they could just... not scan as much, except for looking for drops, because they're the big dog on the playground.
Yep, yeah, I think that's exactly right. It'll put a lot more stress on the mech player to prepare for the anti-air in the late game. And it's actually a really common scenario, because like in TVT, it's getting more figured out where like you can't just kill people in the mid game anymore. It kind of goes to the late game pretty often, and BCs sound kind of uncommon, but they are getting like a lot of attention in TVT, so it could have a lot of an impact.
I like it.
Let's shift the focus over to the Widowmine splash damage radius, decreased from 1.75 to 1.1. I imagine this is going to probably bring out some thoughts from Suppy as well as Xenocider, but also from Jeff. So I feel like when I first said this, Suppy, you had a smile on your face. What's your thoughts on this
splash damage? Well, my initial thoughts... really that, I mean, this is just going to be super good for ZVT because obviously Zergs are going to love this change a lot. But actually, Scarlet was typing about how she really didn't like the change, and I was like, why? And she ended up saying that a really, really big part of the time, the engagements comes to you, like you as the Zerg player, using your Zerglings to engage and like run onto their Marines and splash all their Marines to super low HP.
I got an idea. Buff what? Zerg by increasing the radius of the Widowmine.
That's perfect.
Thrilled at that. She'd be so happy.
No, and but it's actually...
Let's up
no.
John M2. Yes, up the damage, no. Up the radius, and nerf Terran that way.
No. It's a good point.
That's Scarlet being cheeky as shit, man, and I hate using that word, but I'm using it here. Like, I know what she's saying. Yes, a lot of times we've seen those amazing moments where the Lings run through and they drag the mine shot into the medevacs, into the, you know, the marine mass, and we definitely see that. But what she's for some reason not citing is that that's the oddball moment. What most of the time happens, like in the range of 7-8 times out of 10, is those Widow Mines not fucking up their job and blowing apart the Zerg left and right. So it's really weird to me that Scarlet's like, actually, in those two moments of awesome, I'd like that, I want it there. It's like, no, you don't want that at all. That's fucking terrible.
I imagine a very graceful, like, martial artist, you know, doing his or her thing, and I'm just in awe. And that's what I feel like, you know, what Scarlett describes. And then I think about what my play would be like, and I imagine the Star Wars kid, right? And just that it's like oh, they'll just surround them, and everything will die. It's like, but everything of mine died. I have to agree with the control a little bit here, so. I think such a low percentile of people who that would actually.
Well, Lebo, what do you think about, like, Terrans getting killed by their own Widow Mines?
Yes, Terran.
I think it's a pretty big part of the engagements in ZVT is trying to get your Zerglings to hit their units.
I think it's kind of, like, hard because, like, when you watch a lot of TVZ on, like, I don't know, just watching tournaments or something, and you see, like, one Widow Mine kill like 20 banelings, and you're like, holy shit, Widow Mines are just fucking broken, right? So obviously buffing or nerfing the splash radius would hurt Terran, but I think what Suppy and Scarlet are saying does hold some truth to it. The main way to engage Terran is that you need to run by, like, at the highest skill level. I think this is really good for, like, the lower skill cap, but the highest skill level, you want to run by past their army. So, because, like, that's pretty much the only way to engage a Zerg. You have to run by so the Widow Mines don't only kill your Zerglings and do some damage to the Marines. But, yeah, that's, I don't know.
Guys, I did a quick poll while we were talking about this, and I have to admit I was wrong. I actually polled every single Terran player on the planet about this, if they agree with Scarlet, and it's really fucking weird. 98% of them agree with Scarlet, so this is a...
Can you tell us who the 2% were? Come on, one name.
Well, I don't like to give up. I don't like to give it up. I don't... Okay. It was Morrow, but Morrow was one of the guys. Because he plays ZVT, or used to at least, but... I know what you guys are saying. Like, I have to speak to this, otherwise people would be like, yeah, like, if in control still played, he'd see the Widow Mines hit the fucking Terran. Scarlet's always right. And it's like, well, yes, Scarlet's an extremely intelligent player, and I know exactly what she's talking about, and I know this phenomenon, but I feel like if you take a step back and say that while the Zerg's job is to try and drag those Widow Mine shots into friendly fire, and in every match, I feel like the numbers are, like, I would inflate it a little bit and say maybe three or four times out of 10, the Zerg does win out on a Widow Mine blast, okay? Like in a typical game. But if we're just playing a raw numbers game, that still to me does mean that 6 or 7 times out of 10, the Widow Mine is blowing up a large number of Zerg. But the problem with the Widow Mine is also what it does to the Zerg, right? Like, once there's a parade of Widow Mines coming out, the Zerg can't just move around the map. It has to have overseers clumped, or not necessarily clumped, but with its army. It has to pre-spread. It has to engage by sending little units of Zerglings getting in there. And what Terrans are getting better at doing is lifting up their Widow Mines and then burrowing them down when those little packs of Zerglings come in. So then it's like, yeah, come at me, bro. And we get into this situation in these games where the Zerg's like, okay, that guy's got 22 Widow Mines, and we're at 3-3. I actually can't engage. I just fucking can't. I cannot. And this radius does not change that dramatically, but it reduces it enough where it is becoming more in favor of the Zerg, which at this point in time, I think we can agree, we're arguing about pulling the Zerg towards the middle ground as opposed to this favored matchup towards Terran. Is there any Terran out there that thinks that Terran is not favored against Zerg right now? I would really wonder that.
Well, a major. but what he does hold some merit. I think Zerg is getting better. Like, in the history of StarCraft 2, Zerg always needs some time, right? And, like, yes, a lot of things seem unanswerable, but eventually Zerg does actually adapt. So, I mean, right now, they've been adding a lot more mutas into their late game play, and I've seen in the recent ZVT matches with Dongrengu and Curious that works, like, to a great effect. Like, Terran might still be favored, but if it is, it's not nearly as bad as it was, like, when Innovation was playing Soul Key.
So. I agree, 100%. You're right. Zergs have gotten better about this, and the matchup is far and away more exciting to watch these days than even just as little as like a month ago. It was really bad a month ago, but right now it's getting better.
The one thing I think is, like, I personally feel like ZVT is the most balanced matchup and probably one of the most exciting matchups to watch in StarCraft. And, I mean, ZVT has always been one of the more fun matchups to watch. And so I don't really get why they're changing it. I know they want more siege tank usage or more diversity or whatever, but I think it would be really nice to see how the matchup continues to develop. And nerfing, I've always been a very, very big opponent to nerfing things, because I feel like when they're nerfing the Widowmine, you know, sometimes there are opportunities for the Widowmine to have like really huge shots, or we get the Stefano moment against 4GG where everything blows up, or we get moments where DRG's playing innovation and like 20 Banelings blow up on one Widowmine, but DRG still manages to win or something. You know, I really like big moments like that. So I don't know if I really, really like the change.
It's, you know, so let's segue a little bit, because you say something there that I want to reference back to what Blizzard wrote in the blog, where it says, you know, ultimately, we believe a mix of Widowmines and Siege Tanks with your Bio Army will be a lot more fun to watch than just Widowmines with Bio alone, which kind of like speaks a little bit to what we have been seeing a lot, especially in TVZ. So it's funny, because I feel like, exactly like you said, Suppy, well, we're going to nerf this, but this is why you're going to add those siege tanks. And then they go on to, you know, the siege tank attack period changed. So I don't know. I kind of feel like there's a little bit of steering here by Blizzard. Like, we want you to be playing sort of this biomech mixture like you once did. But, you know, so, well, I guess let's move on to the siege tank the trifecta of Terran, is that Siege Tank attack period decreased from 3 to 2.7. And this is kind of a harder one to visualize, but initial reaction? Well, fuck, I mean, it's a lot of damage, right? But like,
you're right, it is hard to visualize.
I looked at the test pictures that people had already made on Reddit. Yeah. Even harder to visualize. I'll show them here in just a second.
So it was like completely random.
It's totally random, dude.
I think the thing I like about this, and I've already given this analysis, so it won't be nearly as long-winded as I normally am, is that the tank is an extremely powerful unit, and if you give too much to it, it blows this. I mean, it doesn't blow the game up, but it just pushes it in a bad direction. But it does need a little extra something. We don't see tanks in TVP except for the odd, you know, one in ten games, like very rarely. And then in TVZ, we stopped seeing them as well. I mean, it used to be that you needed a tank for Roach Baneling all-ins, and that was, you know, certainly something people did do. I think its bomber still makes a few tanks every once in a while, but that's about it. And really, it's just those three tanks that he starts off with to take his fast third, and then they disappear. He doesn't continue production on them. So I like that they're giving a little extra nudge. This does increase its damage output very little, not gigantic. But that little extra nudge means that people can return to the table and start experimenting with it. And then when you combine this, as I said earlier, with that upgrade change, so now in TVP, I'm already upgrading my Vikings, but shit, my tanks are getting a buff here too. Why not incorporate 5 or 6 tanks and force that Protoss to need to include Immortals in their army composition, but then also micro their fucking army instead too? Like, if you're facing tanks, you don't just I guess you could A-move, and if you catch the Terran off guard, yeah, that's what you do, but if you're facing an encamped Terran with a significant number of tanks, you now have to engage in a certain way and with a certain amount of micro. And I think that always increases the skill of the game and makes it more exciting to watch. But also, we're talking about basically resurrecting a unit which in 2 out of the 3 matchups doesn't really exist. That will always make this game look better, because there's going to be people that still stay away from the tanks, but now there's more people with tanks. Now we're facing tanks. We're bringing in different units, different army compositions, different micro, and that makes this game better. So a little extra nudge, good thing. Thumbs up.
Of course, Jeff is a Protoss player, so he has to address the Protoss side of it, and I pretty much agree with most of the things that he says. It could lead to, I feel like mech play just needs like a little bit more of a push in TVP, but I can address that later. I feel like based on what they say in the actual blog post, it's more directed towards TVZ, because it's mainly referencing the Widowmine, and like Widowmines are not used in TVT. Oh, in TVP you can open with Widowmines, but it's not part of your army composition. So the thing I don't like about siege tanks in TVZ though is I already talked about how the fact like Zerg really likes adding mutas into like their composition, like a lot of mutas. Basically, the problem is once you get like past 2 tanks, and this is off of certain builds, like you really can't get any more tanks. You just get completely demolished, pretty much. Mutas will just fly around. Like, it was already getting kind of like bad in Wings of Liberty, but Mutas, at the speed they're at right now and the regeneration they have, it's just like tanks are just not viable versus a good Muta player. I mean, it could be. Maybe somebody will find a good way to incorporate it, but like the builds that Bomber uses with the three tanks to guard the Widowmines, that is very specific metagame implications. Like, it's not, I don't feel like it's something that can be done regularly, but I don't know.
I think to add to Zeno's thoughts here too, because I agree with him in the TBZ matchup, is that it's running into that problem that StarCraft II has had since the very beginning, and that's redundancy as well. Like, if I'm a Terran versus Zerg player and I'm looking at the game going in, I'm like, yeah, I could add a couple tanks at high cost and a little extra supply, or in a very similar role with, I guess, less range, I could just add more Widowmines, but they also affect the Mutalis. Like, siege tanks are great against Baneling clumps, and they instigate the fight. Like, the Zerg has to come into the siege tanks, and that allows the Terran to dictate the course of the battle by, you know, setting up beforehand. But as Zeno said, when it's the Zerg kind of getting around that and manipulating that advantage by using the speed and regeneration of the Mutalis to then decide where the fight's going to happen, the Terran would rather have them more mobile and still have the ability to answer air through the Widowmine at an inexpensive and less supply-dense unit. So it's like, unless you took away... I mean, what would you do? I don't know. I don't know what you would do to make that choice a little bit more difficult for the Terran, but as it is, they're like, oh yeah, I'll go Widowmine. I'm not going to go tank. That doesn't make sense. Except for the beginning, like Zeno said.
Any implications of this change, thinking not about the mech side, but about with the bio? I mean, with bio play? I mean, I know you just mentioned, Zeno, like the reasons why you don't like to necessarily go tanks that way. Do you think that there's any arguments for that?
Oh, man. Let's see. I mean... No.
It'll be very good against... I think it's really going to heavily discourage anybody from doing Roach Hydra or Roach builds anymore, because the tank is just going to be so strong. I think it can hold off all that kind of aggression. And so, I think it's nice that it's going to make people experiment. It's going to change the matchup a little bit. And I wanted to address Jeff's point about how, like, we're increasing the diversity in the game basically by allowing more options. But I feel like I sort of have to disagree in terms of we're including this new option, but I feel like it would be like if we said we were balancing Brood War and we decided, oh, hey, scouts should be used more, and we like decreased their cost to like 200 minerals. It's kind of, but like in a matchup that's already pretty good, like PBT, for example, it's like already a pretty good matchup, but we're like trying to force another unit on that hasn't really belonged.
I don't really disagree with you. It's just that, if this was a huge buff, I would agree with you. As it is now, I just don't disagree with you. The matchup is nice, but the tank is one of the most iconic units in all of StarCraft, next to probably the Marine. And I actually like that they're looking for ways to include that. Like your example of the Scout, I don't disagree with that. That unit was absolute shit. You saw it once in a blue moon against a capital class airship. You know, like that was the only time it was worth a damn. And then it was a part of the stove, for God's sakes.
the best strategy ever.
Had a little bit of a role in that. But even that was... It was the stepchild of that build, too. It was all about the Arbiters and DTs. But for me personally, I feel like if they could find a way to get the tank into the matchup... Because I don't think we're talking about seeing a tank as the standard in TVP. I just think that right now it's so foreign and so rare that it has such novelty. It's like, oh, look, Strelok's trying to use tanks again. Well, fucking Immortals. And then it's like, ah, it's like, goody, look at him, he's using mech, how cute. Warp prisms, you know, like, those are still going to be issues for those units, but if you give a little extra push that more people are experimenting with them and changing up builds, I think it could be good. But I don't disagree with you. You're right. You don't need to force a unit in the game. It doesn't have to be in every matchup, but if they could do a little bit more, I think at least potentially it could be a good thing.
I have to say, this is the one that I'm most interested in seeing in action, just to see how it affects the game overall. And let's go through the other three, and then we'll probably talk about all of them sort of combined because they do have some implications when they're sort of smushed together. The Oracle cost decreasing from 150-150 to 150-100. And this kind of goes along, Suppy, with what you were saying about, well, people used it, but then they didn't. So here we're going to, like, we're going to throw it out there because we feel like you should use it. But just the side note that ProDOS feels like it's been playing too defensively outside of Warp Prism harasses. We're seeing Oracles only be used in the early game and not much during any other stage of the game. They hope by reducing the gas cost of the Oracle, they'll be used more throughout the game. They've attempted this before. Jeff?
Yeah, so their thought, I mean, their thought process is that it has appearances in the early game and then just disappears altogether in the late game. And they think that reducing 50 gas is going to make it appear more often, when honestly that's not really the issue, especially late game, which is what they're trying to address with this unit. You're not counting pennies typically, you know what I mean? Like, especially with a unit like the Oracle, you're not going to squeeze out a 25-minute Oracle to then go do base harass. Like, all the tools to handle an Oracle are there. Marines are upgraded, or there's missile turrets, or there's photon cannons, or there's, you know, just things. There's just things to answer them. So really, the Oracle becomes that support unit that's really cool with its revelation ability, or I guess detection will sometimes see it. But that's really kind of a... That's more of a secondary thing, is that it does that. Tempests are very common in the game right now, so perhaps because of this very slight cost upgrade, or excuse me, difference, we'll start to see them used in conjunction with Oracles more often, which is really cool. But honestly, yeah, a lot of ProDOS players are miniature cavemen, and they're like, well, Tempest attack normally anyways, and they might not actually look to do this. But that is a really cool specialty combination that we don't really see in this game. It's you don't typically see one unit acting as like the termite. You know, termites have like a little bug in them that help digest food. That's what this is. Like, it's a symbiotic relationship. We don't have a lot of those in StarCraft II, where one's relatively useless and the big bad boy is cool but better with that other thing. But this one's not that interesting to me for what they're looking at. What I think it will do is it is going to change PvP by quite a bit. It's kind of like the Dark Shrine cost reduction, where a lot of people are going to be like, fuck it, Oracle, I guess, because why not? You know, like, it used to be pretty significant that if you opened Oracle versus Phoenix in PvP, you were running the risk of running into a Phoenix build because you spent so much gas on a unit that's going to get shot down. Certainly that still remains true, but just a little bit less so. So we're going to see more Oracles. And I don't know that that's a bad thing. I think that's pretty cool. Oracles are very micro-intensive units, and they're an answer to DTs, which are kind of boring, shut-down-the-game kind of units. But PvP is not having a lot of problems right now. It's a pretty cool matchup. So anytime someone speaks towards a matchup like PvP changing, it could potentially get better, which is exciting. But right now it's pretty great, kind of like the language Suppy was using earlier, where it's like, I don't know that we need to mess with it.
Suppy or Xeno?
Oracle
thoughts?
So I feel like Blizzard does this a lot, where they just like, they're like, you know, ProDOS needs more harass options in the mid game, so let's just buff or like nerf the cost or something like that. But the problem is for ProDOS mainly about the Oracle. ProDOS isn't just gonna add like a Stargate at 9 minutes or something, and then like build an Oracle, and then the 50 gas will change everything. The problem is, like, if ProDOS is gonna do a build, they're gonna like open up with that build, and then they're just gonna stick with it. Maybe like, if you open up with Oracle, you go Phoenix Colossus or something. But like, what ends up happening with these buffs slash nerfs in is that like the cheese just gets a little bit more annoying. Like, people just do a bit more dedicated builds in the early game, and it doesn't actually end up helping the mid game at all. Like, I feel like the DT movement speed increase could be something that helps the mid game, but not the Oracle. It doesn't really, yeah. I mean, it's just like Terran with the Ravens. Like, ever since Wings of Liberty, everybody's just like, what if Terran just got a Raven, right? But, like, the thing is, in StarCraft 2, people just don't like adding that extra thing, like adding a tech lab and then building a Raven and then cutting something else. Like, it's just not something that is... It looks good on paper, but it just not so much in practice.
Which is silly, by the way.
Yeah.
In TVZ, there's no argument against not having a Raven. like swapping a tech lab and a reactor for the 20 seconds or whatever. It's so bad. And then every time I see Terrans that have like two starports and they're scanning the shit out of Creep, I'm like, ah! My God.
All right. So this one's just crazy. Dark Templar movement speed increased from whatever they are now to as fast as Marines with stim.
I actually kind of like this one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm like the only one.
Sophie, I feel like you're doing this weird thing where you're trying to be like overly humble by liking the things that go against you. And you're like, I don't know. I do so great at StarCraft as it is. I like it.
I don't like the Oracle one. The Oracle one. Usually when I kill an Oracle, I'm like, yeah, I killed an Oracle. Like, now they're really behind. But now I'm like that. But now, I like the DT one. I feel like people should be using DTs more in the late game. I feel like, A, it's a really good comeback unit, which makes the game more exciting, because I think a lot of the times StarCraft has come down to math in some games where like some person's just really behind and they just lose. But now there's like a good way to come back. What?
No, I'm just laughing because this GIF just has these DTs like huffing along with some stim Marines. It's just bonkers. You know, one of the things they say is that we think it'd make gameplay exciting to see people like micro, you know, DTs out of scan range and stuff, which is kind of already happening. But this kind of goes against the philosophy of the Widowmine change, in that this will actually affect non-Protoss under 99%. Well, probably lower than that. But, you know, like, this will affect a lot of Zerg and Terran and non-DT going Protoss. I mean, this is like wielding a fucking crazy weapon in a low-league Protoss's hands. Just my thoughts on that. So it's totally like the polar opposite of what they might have been trying to do for the audience, the general gaming audience with the Widowmine. Jeff?
This will not go through. It just won't. It's not... I want to say it's not as bad as people make it sound like it is, but it probably is. I mean, DTs are not tremendously slow units as they are, and they shouldn't be, but I feel like their speed allows a cool mixture of, like, if you're prepared for it, you probably will handle it, but if you're not prepared for it, it's going to get some damage in. It's going to do some pretty significant damage, even game-ending damage, as we can see in certain circumstances, in all the matchups. So they're a very powerful unit, but they're a glass cannon. By increasing the speed... Like, if this said 2.813 to, like, to 3, you know, a little bit faster, but still not necessarily outrunning almost everything, then I would be a little bit more on board with this, because a speed buff is kind of cool. We do see DTs getting out of detection range. We do see them running in and out of conflict and then hiding, and that is cool and exciting for reasons that, like, Suppy kind of talked about. But at 3.375, they're one of the fastest units in the game. And I feel like it becomes, like, DTs are already very affordable with a reduce the cost of the Dark Shrine. Now it becomes like, well, you just actually should open DTs. Because even if there is an observer there, now we're talking about baiting force fields with DTs and shit. And we're talking about running in up against that, like, early DTs against Zerg, just cutting down the Spore Crawler because they're just too fast for them to react to it. Like, as it is right now, if I see one Spore Crawler, I'm very confident with two or three DTs that I'll cut it down before they react. But with DTs moving at hyperspeed, it's like, well, of course they're going to get cut down and they're going to die. And I think that Protoss does not need one of their absolute key units getting this big of a buff. But, I mean, there's no but. I guess what I would say is that I really feel like this will not go in to actual gameplay. It'll be tested on the maps. And enough people will cry out.
You mentioned a smaller speed buff. Could you see them potentially bringing it back a little bit and say, okay, just up to 3 or
that'd
something?
That'd be cool. Okay. That's an idea. I don't know. Like, that too would have to be practiced pretty extensively. Because, like I said, the DT is a pretty powerful... It's a pretty freaking powerful unit, and it already doesn't cost that much. So if you do buff that unit, you're talking about... It's kind of like when people make wishes in science fiction novels and books those are the same thing, in shows and movies, and they talk about time and shit. Like, you got to be super careful with those wishes, because there's a lot of fucking impacts that echo out from that epicenter, and I feel like the DT is one of those units that is extremely relevant in all three matchups. And if you buff that unit significantly, that's an overall major buff to Protoss, and I don't think that they need a major buff right now. A slight tweak, a little thing to make them a little bit cooler, yeah, that's pretty cool, but not this big. This is ridiculous.
Any final thoughts, you guys? Or do you want to move on to the last piece? Okay, let's move on. Good discussion so far. All right, so last but not least, number 6 is Roach Speed Upgrade also increases the Burrowed Roach movement speed from 1.41 to 2.25. Didn't see a gift for this one, but that's almost a whole point. I'd imagine those are some fast-moving Burrowed Roaches.
And that's ridiculous.
That is the speed of an unstimmed Marauder.
Huh.
Hmm. Or Marine. Unstimmed Marine.
Hmm.
Hmm.
That's pretty quick.
What do you think?
It's interesting. I would have personally preferred they listened to our comments about the Nidus Worm. And the potential changes there, yes. I feel like that would be a much more interesting change. I feel like Burrowed Roaches, half the time when you do use them, now that they're going to be moving super fast, there's going to be like gigantic black streaks on the ground when they're moving past. And they'll just be like,
you know,
oh,
I
think
something about that. It will yeah. darken it a little bit, won't it? Be easier to
I think
see,
so.
Maybe. Might be easier. I don't know. Might be easier to see.
I would like to see.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'd like to see people get Tunneling Claws more often and maybe like do more Burrow Micro. But I don't think... Yeah.
But they do say, I mean, in the things it says, there's some really cool micro potential with Burrow moving Roaches. Like, I don't know if they're suggesting, like, you know, split 6 off and send it into a base and 6 off into this base or something like that. But that...
Actually, I'm just thinking about this and... If this change goes through, I would use it all the time against Protoss. The only reason it's not really used right now is because you can go under the force fields, but it just takes way too long to get to the other side. If you almost double but that's really fast. They're going to be able to get under all the sentries and everything pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and that's like the only matchup it changes, which is... I think the funny thing about this for me is that... Roaches are pretty boring units in general. Like, they're definitely essential for Zerg, so...
Yeah.
Roaches are one of those units where literally, if you're stuck with them too late, you're just fucked for having them, because there's no amount of upgrade changes or anything that's going to make them not just caveman sledgehammer, you know, just like, they do one thing and one thing only. And in the late game, if you give me, like, the late game Protoss army, it's going to absolutely devastate this. But in early game... giving them a huge buff to their burrow speed, I feel like it polarizes the matchup pretty heavily, because in order to get out that many roaches, Zerg once again confines himself to that DRG era where it was like, infinity roaches, mutilus switch, and then that's it. That's the whole fucking matchup. That was it. Like, it was either an earlier mutilus switch, which was kind of cute, or it was super late, 30 mutilus just appear, and that was it. Like, just roaches coming after you. It was a Stefano era. And then for Protoss, they'll have two choices for their own. That's where they open up Robo, and they just Chrono Boost Immortals to Infinity, and then it's that fun battle where you see, like, maxed out Zerg against 130, 140 Protoss, but he has 9 Immortals, so then Zergs get on the forums and are like, the roaches all died to the Immortals! Stupid game! And then, like, they're just sad. Or the Protoss continues to do what they're doing now, which is they, like, make 3 Stargates and churn out Void Rays and then say, sure, go ahead and make yourself some Mutilus. I'll have Phoenix out in 5 seconds. And I don't like that it's being pushed in that direction. I understand the upgrade's not being used, and it should, so maybe give them a slight buff like you would DTs, but making them move as fast as unstimmed Marines makes force fields actually pretty irrelevant. Unless, again, you have fucking 5+ Immortals, in which case go ahead and crawl underneath those force fields and come closer to my guns that blow you to pieces. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it polarizes it really quickly.
Perhaps it could just be a cheaper upgrade. Like 150, 150 could be changed to 100, 100, you know, something like that.
That's a good idea. I mean, that's one way to look at it. Yeah. They could increase the speed. It is too slow. I think that's true. And we are seeing zero of them. Like, a guy did it to me yesterday on the ladder for the first time since HOTS, to be honest with you. I haven't seen it since Daybreak Wings of Liberty back. And even then, it was kind of rare. So we should see more of it. It is cool. But I don't think you should encourage Zerg players to only make roaches, because it makes the game really dumb. And Zergs agree, usually.
And that's why I feel like the Nidus Swarm change, it's more dynamic, it's more interesting. But, I mean, there is definitely some arguments to making the Roach a more interesting unit, because you do want to try and make it a little bit more fun. But I think the Nidus, or anything, I mean, a lot of other proposed changes were listed, right? So some of those are pretty interesting as well.
That's about it. That's all the changes out there. Again, these are all potential test map changes, and that's it. But any final thoughts, you guys?
I have something, at least for TVP. So I feel like a lot of players, especially Terran players right now, feel like it's usually on the forums that like something like Storm is too broken or. But I feel like Storm to Terran is like the Widowmine to Zerg, I guess. Like, I actually don't think that TVP is in balance at all. I do think it's a little bit in favor of Terran right now, especially in tournaments, because right now, Terran SCV pulls, combined with the fact that they can still play late game with a lot of ghosts, is like really, really good. Because basically any map that you don't want to play late game on, that's really wide open, you can pull SCVs on. And like, when I look at SCV pulls in StarCraft 2, I'm just so confused, because it's like, it's a game where you're trying to balance technology, army, and economy. And in one matchup, Terran is basically just investing into econ and army only, not much tech, and then turning the economy into army, basically circumventing any like mid-game or early-game pressure into one huge attack. And for me, it just doesn't like sit well. It's not like what the game was designed to be, I guess. I don't know. I mean, yeah.
No, I understand. That could actually probably be a whole nother deeper discussion. I really want to go into it. All right, let's. We still got quite a bit of cover. I always like when those come out. You guys definitely generate some good discussion, so thank you for that. We spent a little bit more time on that than I thought, and I'm not going to worry too much about phones at this point. I'm just going to kind of keep going. Is that okay with you guys? Okay.
I think if I could submit, looking at your email, we don't have to talk too much about TL This Is Game Partnership, but the interesting subject that I'm looking at would be Rhett's comments on meta about... Yeah.
That's what I was going to go to next. I just wanted to mention the TL This Is Game Partnership because I think this is cool, because obviously we've been getting sort of secondhand Korean news for quite a long time. So knowing that there's going to be sort of a sharing of information and posts and content, that's really great. And you can read all about that on Team Liquid. So more of a be aware of it. This is good. Congratulations, you guys. It sounds good.
And happy birthday to Team Liquid.
And happy birthday yesterday. So yeah, Rhett was on meta, and near the end of the program, they got in this discussion, and I'm not sure, I gave the VOD to Suppy kind of after the fact, probably should have included it in there. Not sure who actually saw it, but you know, Rhett makes this really kind of, you know, to me it just shows Rhett's passion, right? Because he's like, dude, StarCraft is an elegant game. And you know, to the TLDR is basically he feels like StarCraft is elegant, but it's not necessarily being conveyed that way. And you know, I totally understood what he was saying about how, like, you know, StarCraft is it is a beautiful game, and there are so many things going on at any given time. You know, the thing that really rang true to me with these guys is both TLO and Rhett saying, you know, it's funny because, like, after a tournament, I'm talking as if I was TLO or Rhett. they would go back and they would watch the VODs of the cast because they would know, like, during the game this super fucking cool thing happened. And it would happen and, you know, the stream was focused on something else, or, you know, the discussion wasn't necessarily about what was happening in the game, but, you know, about other stuff. And he makes actually some really, you know, some really great points about it. It was something that I certainly wanted to ask you guys about, because in thinking about it a little bit and reading in some of the comments, you know, I do feel like different people want different stuff out of StarCraft. And so on one hand, there's a you can't please everyone, you know, type answer to this. But on the other hand, like, I really do agree with a lot of what Rhett says. And I think that StarCraft 2, to me, is a lot like Quake. I think it's a beautiful game. You know, being able to watch and see something that I know I can't do, there's beauty in that to me. I'm not sure if that's the same for everyone and for, you know, the 12,900 people tuned in to WCS America, or the, you know, the 30,000 whatever for WCSEU or GSL or whatever. You know, do those audiences and what they're looking for in StarCraft, does that change and shift? I thought it was a great topic. Would love to hear your guys' thoughts on it. Again, this comes from the meta discussion. I believe it was on last week. And I kind of open up the floor for a discussion.
You guys go first. I've been talking too much.
Did you guys get to see it by chance, Suppy? I know, like, I gave you the VOD a lot.
I actually didn't get a chance to see it.
Okay.
So,
I mean, what? I guess then I would just ask this, because, you know, if you don't want to necessarily speak to something you didn't watch, like, when you, I know, like, you hang out on the Zerg channel and you watch a lot of games with other Zergs, and so you probably, like, appreciate it. In fact, I'd even be willing to guess, I mean, you guys have casted some games, and I'd be willing to guess that, like, you would listen to casters, but for the most part, you're almost, like, chatting about the game and, you know, going about it that way. So I guess my question is like, what do you want out of, like, broadcasting in terms of, you know, like, is it just covering the game? Is it showing the intricacies and the beauty of StarCraft II? Is it combining all of these things? Like, I guess, like, what do you look for?
I definitely feel like you do want to have that analysis of, like, all the very small decisions that people make and everything. Although I feel like it's not always possible because, like you said, it is very difficult to see those kinds of things. And so I've sort of wanted just more. One thing for me is, like, for the English commentators, I'd love to have more passion and, like, excitement during the battles. And that's something I've always wanted in terms of, like, back when I used to cast, I, like, tried to emulate the Korean commentators. And just to make everything into a big deal. I don't really know. It's,
oh my god. There was a
YouTube video recently of Wolf and Kaldor and some Hellbats getting killed or killing some drones and stuff, and they really emphasized that was a big deal. I don't know. I don't really know what to take with this.
All right. Okay. I'll lead the way for you youngins, and then you can consult with Scarlet and talk about whether you agree or disagree. Here's what I like about Rhett's point, and actually, it's not just Rhett's point. I mean, Rhett made the specific word that we're just, or the phrase that we're discussing, but that meta episode is really cool to watch.
Yeah.
And it's all over Reddit. They had like 7 threads out of the top fucking 20 or whatever it was that day. So if you're like, I should check that out, I don't even need to link you. If you do a very general Google search, you'll come across the many, many, many discussions that went on about it. Rhett was talking about how, and Rhett and the other Europeans on the show were talking about how when they play a game, a lot of times the commentators kind of gloss over the finer, more nuanced details of what they're doing to try to edge out an advantage or edge out a victory, and how the game becomes a little bit more generic and bland just because the players aren't getting the appreciation for the really cool in-depth stuff that they're doing. And of course, they're not. They didn't name names, and they didn't say that it's like this gigantic issue that nobody is doing. But they said that this could be done much more often and should be looked at, and it would increase. It would enrich the game. It would make the players look better because their practice is starting to actually be given attention, and the details of the game would be appreciated by the audience as it's conveyed by the casters. And when I heard this, one of the things that leapt out at me, because I agree fully, it's something that every single commentator should strive to do more often of, and this is something that I actually work on pretty, because I'm like any other commentator, I too will be like, you have so much to convey and talk about that a lot of times you can't spend too much time about how he burrowed the weakest roach and then moved forward the most healthy one to tank that damage so that the guys behind it could eliminate that final immortal that was the real DPS deliverer of that army composition, and that's what allowed him to win that fight. You know, like, Stefano was one of the famous guys that made commentators need to step up their game, because when he attacked with a clump of roaches, the easiest assumption to make was he's just A-moving. No, he's grabbing these five and shooting these three sentries by right-clicking through them, and then these ones are moving inside the force fields and focusing down the immortals and ignoring the stalkers. Like, really cool stuff that people weren't doing as much of didn't get conveyed every single time. But what I'm trying to get at, in a long-winded way, obviously, because it's me, is I feel like what absolutely came away from this to me is that commentators have to practice StarCraft II to even come close to delivering what these guys are talking about. And I know a lot of people look at that comment and say, well, that's so incredibly basic, and you know, thank you, Captain Obvious, but you'll be surprised how many commentators do not play the game. And I don't mean like all the time. I mean they just don't play the game. They just don't play it. And they go, they have a great personality, they have a great voice, they sit down and they talk about StarCraft, and people are very happy to listen to them talk about StarCraft. And they'll do a good job because they're experienced commentators that are, like I said, have great personalities and they know of the game, so they'll do it. But when I look at the state of casting right now, and I look at the complaints of these high-level European players, I can see a direct correlation to a player/commentator that's really connected to the game and knows what they're talking about and is able to deliver those nuanced things on some level, give appreciation to the players. And that's really paramount to the overall casting quality. So I'm not going to call out names. That's just not productive. And I'm also going to give the defense that a lot of our commentators, we as StarCraft II players, are extremely fortunate that they're in such high demand and they're so good at what they do that they actually are branching out to other games. And it's not for such a generic hashtag dead game or some shit. It's just because they're in demand and they have a family to pay for and they've got careers to grow. So they can't give all their attention to StarCraft. And I can appreciate and respect that. But what I would hope is that if commentators are hired for like a big gig, I would really hope, and I would hope part of what goes into that is that these guys are players and lovers of the game and that they do spend time with the game. So they don't need to analyze it on a grubby fucking level. Okay, you're not going to spend as much time as Grubby does on this game. And you don't need to hire Grubby either. Not calling him out, just saying it doesn't have to be pro players to do all the jobs. But if I'm a commentator that's paid money to be flown across the country to sit down and talk about these kids, these young men that spend 10 plus hours a day playing this game, I would hope to God I don't embarrass their work ethic, their productivity, and myself as a contributor to the scene by like the 2 weeks leading up to it playing Hearthstone on stream all day long. Like, that would be really, really bad. I need to spend several hours a day playing StarCraft so that when I sit down and they do something really cool, I go, he's microing this great. That battle went really well. And over here, there's a drop. And that drop's killing stuff. It's killing stuff. And then the other guy's like, yes, it is.
It killed stuff.
I would hope he would talk about the cool details of it so that people in the audience are like, you know, just like, I couldn't do that in a million years, and I appreciate this, and it's awesome. That would be awesome.
Okay, so let me, because, right, like, a lot of points that even we've covered on the show. To Rhett's point about StarCraft being elegant, are the casters who are highly qualified and are really the best at conveying that elegance, should they increase the amount of elegance pointing out that they maybe are not doing?
Thank you. Okay, that's a really good point. I actually, again, I got so fucking long-winded there, I forgot about my second part. That's exactly it. I started off by saying this. I work really hard at trying to include more in my commentary when I do it, looking at those details, because they're a really cool opportunity to be very appreciative and optimistic, but also I'm not really wording this the way I want to, but you're speaking well of the player you're commentating, and this is a subject we talked about in the past. Artosis is one of the best at doing this. when a player makes a mistake, instead of focusing on, wow, that was really terrible and I can't believe he did that, this elegance that Rhett's speaking of is a really cool opportunity to start talking about, oh my God, the other guy is applying so much multitask-oriented stress on his opponent that look where he's falling apart here, because in this small situation with that drop, he included a Widowmine, and that Widowmine's planted, so now he needs detection over there. And that attention to detail is brilliant from our Terran player, Pult. You know, he's just doing such a great job with this. So you're speaking to the details of the game and the nuances, and of course you can go even deeper than that. But it also allows you the opportunity to talk up one player and mention the mistakes of the other, but through the lens of they're being pressured, they're suffering from the affliction of the game.
Zeno and Suppy, let me throw out this question, and of course any response you might have to In Control. Do you think that we need to incorporate more first-person view into the audience camera to maybe appreciate the fact that StarCraft isn't always a well-oiled machine that people are, you know, are it's presented to them as?
Yeah, they should definitely use more first-person view, and that's something that they used to use in Brood War a lot as well, because it really just shows, you know, the capabilities of the player and just like all the small things they're doing, but when you're watching the big screen, you don't actually see these actions. And bringing up like In Control's point about, you know, hyping up one player is like doing something good and, you know, not harping on the mistakes of one player because it seems like they messed up, but actually talking up the other player. This is like a situation I think that happens a lot, but it's missed a lot in a lot of commentary. So I understand the point here. For example, one thing is a lot of times you'll see Terran versus Zerg. Terran will just suddenly, it seems like they're not splitting at all, and all of their Marines died to Banelings. Right. And the commentator's like, what was he doing?
What
a noob. He didn't split at all. But the real thing is like a lot of times it's because what a Zerg will try to do is they're going to try and counterattack with just like 10 Zerglings or something. And so right as the Terran is looking in that direction, going to like lift his depots or whatever, that's exactly when the Zerg attacks. And so that's another thing that the first-person view would actually allow you to realize is he wasn't looking. That's why he was distracted by the other player who made a great play and allowed that advantage, that vulnerability to be taken advantage of.
Zeno, any thoughts?
One of my favorite things that MLG did, like, I think it was a while ago, but back when StarCraft II was really main stage, they had like the screen where everybody, like, it's just a regular game, but on both sides they have the individual points of view.
Right.
Like, when I was watching tournaments like that, that was like sick awesome. Like, I was watching Terran, and then, like, you know, like, they just know that they're fucked, but they're like, oh god, like, you know, it was really nice to see people or the perspective from, you know, the players. And like, it has to be stressed that basically everybody that plays in televised matches spends like 12 hours in the game. It's not like they just randomly forgot to do something, right? That like something has to be going on for somebody to make a mistake. It's pretty much all forced errors at that point when it's at the really high pro level. But that's my thoughts on that. But before we were talking about like Artosis. Something else Artosis does really well, and I can tell he's like a Protoss player from this, is because like when he talks about Protoss builds and stuff like that, he's like, oh man, that's so smart. He's taking a probe off of gas right now at this exact moment, and that means he's going to have enough gas to do something like 10 minutes later from now, and it's going to work out all well and dandy. Like, I feel like if analytical casters like really did their homework on builds, like it would really like make a lot of sense, because a lot of builds are really well thought out. And some of it might look really random, but if you do your research on it, actually, like, it's really beautiful, I think, from the strategical aspect.
What I would take away from this, that I really like the conversation, and I think everyone knows this, and again, a lot of the commentators, they, like I said, they do have this problem where they are taxed with having to play other games because they enjoy it, or they have a show on it, or that's just, you know, what they want to do, and they're not to be demonized for that, but I think there's things that people can do to make their casting a lot better, more towards what we're all talking about, including the European players in that meta show. And that would be to spend some time in the game, make sure you're playing it, because if that is what you're going to do for money, I feel like you deserve to the people, the players, and yourself to put in that time. But then even beyond that, work on the things like you guys are talking about, like knowing a build on that level, that's nice, and you got to work towards that. But that's not, I don't know that that should ever be like expected. It's just something that you could do to be better. But I think spending time looking for ways to word things complimentary and talk about the stress of the game as opposed to this guy made a horrible mistake. What a terrible mistake. And sometimes players do make mistakes. So there is ways to, I mean, there are times to talk about that, sure. But I feel like if you err on the side of, oh my God, he's buckling under the pressure from this attack and this relentless aggression, that makes the game more exciting and cool than being like, I don't know, guys. He might just be drunk at the wheel. Like, that was really dumb. And we're all guilty of that. Like, I myself, through the SC12 season, can remember right now times where I probably spent too much time saying, this is the wrong choice. This is just bad. I don't like it at all. Instead, I could have been more like, while I don't necessarily disagree, or while I disagree with what he's doing, I can see that this is what he's trying to do, and we'll have to see if it works out. And then if it does or doesn't, it allows us the opportunity to be like, wow, brilliant planning, and start to talk a little bit more about the in-depth aspect of the game than as opposed to just right over the surface where you're just like, that was dumb, you know?
At the same time, though, like, a commentator should give, I mean, they should give their opinion, but just not necessarily, like, treat their opinion as if it's, like, fact or something. I mean, because obviously a lot of the commentators aren't professional players or whatever, but I don't think they should completely just not give their opinion at all and just say, let's see if it works out. But I think it would make the game a lot more exciting if they did do something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I would definitely say, I mean, Rhett made some, like, a great little speech, you know, on the show. If you, like, check it out, I highly encourage you. It's in, like, the last quarter of the show. But, you know, some great thoughts, and I don't necessarily think anything is resolved, but it makes for great discussion. So definitely something to check out. So, all right, before we go into WCS, I got an email from a user that I originally was like, okay, this is just like a troll email. So I emailed him back, and he was like, no, actually, he's like, I've been watching the show forever. He's like, I was just, you know, based off of what he's seen happen in this community, I think he was like interested in getting your opinion. So here's what he writes. Last night during Riot Worlds, Cloud9, the last North American hope, was eliminated by EU's Fnatic. This is the second year in a row that North America was crushed after being on top very early in League's life. This progression almost matches StarCraft 2. I think he means sort of the evolution and sort of the regions. Where early on there was a U.S. focus, but then as EU and KR joined the scene, they became the dominant regions. You have discussed the difference between regions so many times before, but do you think this is a running commentary on the U.S.'s skill in strategy games? It seems hard to ignore as more games reinforce this theory. Now here's where I was like, okay, this guy is definitely trolling, but was interested. He says, lastly, does it make you feel any better about the state of US, NA, and StarCraft 2, knowing that there are other games that are struggling and having and like similar region power struggles?
I think it's always an interesting conversation to have, because certainly we're most comfortable talking about its relation to StarCraft, and I think it's easier for us to wrap our head around the idea that in Korea this is like, you know, StarCraft has such a history, it's so much more well established. So the practice, I mean, all the things you've heard us say before, I need to go down that path. And then in Europe, we have a little bit less leeway in terms of excuses, because in Europe, we talk about, well, okay, their professional scene seems to be more consistent and stable for a longer period of time, so maybe that's where it starts. But, you know, it's not even just our game. I think of Counter-Strike and how Europe dominated there. I think of now in League of Legends, but also in Dota. The best teams come out of Europe, generally speaking. I mean, the Lions, Swedish. And now at League of Legends, Cloud9 goes like 30-3 through the LCS NA to qualify for Worlds, gets to Worlds, they play one series and lose 1-2 to Fnatic, and at least one of those three games is a routing. Like they got stomped pretty hard.
Yeah, the last game.
So it's a little bit severe. It's a little bit of format too. Like if Cloud9 played in the group stage, would they have taken top in the group and then we'd all be like very proud of their performance? But because they won NA, we only got to see them play one best of three, and then they lose there. And this is the second year in a row where this has happened. 26-2, someone corrects me, but, you know, very well in the group play or season play. But the other thing to look at this too is, like, with the LCS format, and again, I'm not making mistakes, but I'm just kind of looking at this from a different perspective, I guess.
Sure.
We've only gotten to see NA teams play on these international stages at the Worlds twice now. Or is it three times? Is this their third Worlds or two?
This is the third, but...
And in the first one, they did do very well because the rest of the scene wasn't developed.
Well, yeah, but Europe's still won.
Yeah, so Europe won that one anyways. But with this format, we don't really get to test these numbers too terribly high. And I'm sure if we brought the Koreans and the Chinese and the Europeans to the NA region, these numbers would be fairly true. But I guess what I'm just trying to say is it's when you have fewer numbers, it's harder to justify and to make rulings on. But also, if your solo mids and your cloud nines and your curses practice more consistently with the Europeans and with the Koreans, would they get better and scale up there with them as well? Or is it really just that people in North America are not as good at games as Europeans and Koreans and Chinese?
I don't know, man.
I think
because I don't have an answer. I can't speak. I know.
I didn't expect anyone to. It's one of those like thought provoking things. It's like, well, I can't.
Because we, like I said, in StarCraft, I know our excuses, and they're real. They really are, and they're excuses for sure. But they are real. Like if you don't go to create a train, you're probably not going to be a world class talent. We do have our Scarlets and our a few other players have poked up there. People would be like Huck went to Korean train. Scarlet did for a while. And you know what? Even that, actually, maybe that did tip her over in certain regards as well. She did win WCS North America without having gone to Korea, though, so she had pretty good accomplishments. But that was against non-Koreans.
Stefano would be
another good example. Never trained in Korea. The time that he did there, he was fairly brief, and he got all his success before that, beating Koreans. But outside of that, the proof is in the pudding. Koreans dominate. Some Europeans poke and prod at it, but even that, those results are few and far between versus the Koreans. And our excuses are that in Korea, StarCraft was a national pastime back in Brood War days and was huge. And from that, they've got companies established and looking for talent. They've got coaches. They've got handlers. They've got cooks. This is like a very established sport for them, whereas everywhere else, we're still going to school. We're still working jobs. Our family is telling us to stop playing the game because you're an idiot. And obviously those things, varying degrees, but that's our excuses. In LoL, as far as I know, they've got houses. They've got, they scrim with their teams. I don't know how the servers work. I don't know that you can play LoL in Europe and Korea. I don't think you can. You have to play in North America. Latency reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same some issues.
Oh, the snoring's my bulldog, by the way, guys. Sorry.
Oh, I thought it was like a radio show on in the background. That's actually hilarious.
Yeah.
He just hangs out behind me and goes to sleep when I talk too much. You're scared.
Suppy and Zeno, any final thoughts on this?
It looks like Lebo wants to say something.
Okay, so recently I've basically been playing exclusively on the EU ladder now, not so much on the NA anymore, but I realized that like when I go to the EU ladder, like the skill cap is a little bit higher and it really helps. Like I don't feel like as a player to succeed, I need like a team house where I need like coaches and all that stuff. It's not true, and like,
we'll see.
Like,
you have to succeed first, right? I mean, maybe it is true, and you don't know, and you're not going to succeed.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like,
go ahead, keep talking. Sorry,
Rip.
Rip in peace.
I feel like I've improved a lot on the European ladder, it having a higher skill cap, which is like really the most important thing for me. Like the thing is with when we send players to Korea, it's like it's really a limited sample size. Like we can only send like players that are already doing well. And just because they're doing well and we send them to Korea doesn't mean like they're going to get better. Like if we could have like the entire NA population play on Korea with no delay or something, maybe like some people would flourish, and that doesn't necessarily have to be the top level of players or something. I mean, it could be, but like just sending Stefano there and seeing that it doesn't work or something, or doesn't really mean that much. Like it's hard to say. I guess that's all I have to say.
For me, regarding the first question, whether it's a running commentary on US's skill in games, I do think it is something that reinforces the theory. I do think North America is the worst place for people to. I mean, for the people are worst in North America, and I think it's. Obviously, we do have the excuses, like Jeff mentioned, but I think a big part of it is like the culture, and I guess that's an excuse as well. But at least in Europe, I think it's more accepted to game there, and in America, perhaps we are more lazy than other people, or more we want to like go out more or something compared to the other people. Definitely in comparison to Asia, and maybe to some degree in Europe. I've heard that they spend a lot of time indoors during the winter when it gets really cold or whatever, and so that's maybe another reason why they're maybe spending more time and practicing more and better at that aspect of the game. And regarding, does it make me feel better about the state of US, North America, in StarCraft II, knowing that other games struggle with other powerful regions? I think to a degree it does make you feel a little bit better, because you know you're not the only person experiencing this difficulty. You know it's sort of a widespread thing. It's not just you suck or something. It's kind of like the circumstances I am make it harder for me to do as well. But it also, you can't use that as an excuse for why you're not doing
right,
well.
Right.
So you have to get over that and try and succeed regardless of where you are. So it does make you feel a little bit better because you know other people are in it with you, but I guess that's the full extent of what it is.
Word. All right, let's talk WCS, so then we can make sure to get Goat Lust on. We're not allowed to leave him out
Can I put something to a vote?
Yes.
I'd like to put to a vote that we do phones instead of talk about WCS again.
Okay. That's fine.
If there's interest, if you guys agree and think that.
I mean, you know, if there's any games that stood out, the only thing I was really going to talk about, at least one of the big points, was I think everyone was, everyone like Lebo was talking about Happy. And Happy, like, he struggled today.
He should have won.
That draw was really painful to watch. That was tough.
Oh, man, dude.
Very, very sad.
Intense.
He was really ahead. The Marauder Micro was sick.
I'm opening the phones, by the way. We'll just kind of talk while we wait for calls.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I encourage, a couple people were asking, and this was a hot button topic and has been. People have been asking about the Pizza GG stuff and all that, and I'll speak to it at the end of this too, but the broken promises. So if someone wants to call in and ask about that, they can.
Someone usually does anyway.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
All right, let me make sure that everything's set up over here on this side, and I think we are good. So we're going to take the first caller. We've got an unknown number. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Whoa, sick. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, I called in last week. I'm Samson Aryan. Is Aryan?
Welcome back.
Awesome. Aryan? Thank you guys so much. Yeah. Hi.
Nice.
All right. It was really nice hearing what your thoughts were on the potential balance changes.
Uh-huh.
But for me, my idea, because I don't necessarily think there needs to be any changes. I'm really happy with it is, especially the DT. Like, I don't see. Okay, well, what's it called? My question was, do you guys think that, because I'm having a lot of trouble with Zerg right now, because tech switches are getting really hard, and in my opinion, I don't think Muta Regen should be as fast as it is. Because I remember in Wings of Liberty, I remember that Storm used to be, like, a viable option versus it. But nowadays, I feel like Phoenix is the only thing, and then
you're Protoss for one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a Protoss.
Okay. Guys, what do you think?
First of all, I think it's cool that Lebo was able to call into the show that he's actually already on.
So many shots today, Jeff. Why? Oh my god! I wasn't prepared.
As far as like meter regeneration and stuff like that, like, this has been discussed, and it is definitely true that I do feel like as a Protoss, situationally, there are times where perhaps you're in the middle of the map and mutas are starting to come out, so then you're in an okay spot to just attack and push, but then it turns to that counterattack base trade situation, which oftentimes is pretty hard. But if the Zerg, like, tries to fight you for even 5 seconds, then you're going to win if they don't counterattack. So that's like the situation, but in general, you really do only have Phoenixes as your answer to Mutalis. Blink Stalkers will keep you okay. And if you're on three bases, you can get Templar and Archons out. And if they make a mistake, then sure, you can soften them up enough where you're hunting them down or something like that. But in general, you would have to have Phoenixes. But I don't think it's such a problem that they need to do anything with regeneration or the Mutalisk in general, really, because that would have pretty big effects on ZVT. And meatalists are a pretty cool part of ZBZ right now. There's a little bit of that diversity going on. And even in ZBP, I don't think that... I just don't think that it's as big of a problem. Like, it's up to the Protoss with Hallucinate Phoenix and Observers to see them coming and to be prepared. And if you don't see them coming, then you're going to be punished for it. But there's also all kinds of other signs, like Lings running around without higher cost units coming out, that kind of thing. So I feel like there's a back and forth between Zerg and Protoss in that matchup. That yes, Meatless are very powerful, but as we both know, so are Phoenix. So if you are prepared for Meatless, the Zerg has a certain element of risk to that. It's not like they can safely go Meatless every game. If you know Meatless are coming, you will put them down harder than old DLR got put down at the end of that movie. There are answers. You just have to be prepared for it.
Yeah, I think tech switching in general in the ZVP matchup, if I was a Protoss, I would be extremely scared about it. But one thing that we've started to see recently, and something that I've thought has been really interesting, is just how the matchup has been changing. We saw Jadong really, really popularize the Muta tech switch. And what's really interesting now is after the first engagement, some people are just blindly starting to build Phoenix against him and just kill him.
Yeah, that's
because,
what I'm saying.
Yeah, because they know he's going to do it. And so it's becoming this really interesting dynamic about, first of all, there's like a lot of scouting going on in between both players because you really need to find out what the other person's doing. And the other thing is it's kind of the metagame is shifting because Muta switches aren't working quite as well as they did before. They're still very strong, but a lot of people are coming to expect it now because of how popular it is. So I think it would be nice to keep the Muta house thing regen, but just see how the matchup continues to develop.
All right. Caller, thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yep, take care. Bye-bye. Oh, my God, we got the best suppy cam freeze ever.
Again?
That's perfect. Yeah.
How does this happen?
I was, like, just walking in the forest, man, and then I just...
God.
Came up to this place and there were all these plants.
Too late, Stuffy. You're on the top of Reddit in 5 minutes. Don't worry about it.
All right. We're going to take... I'll take this call right here. Area code 650. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Hello?
Hello. How are you doing?
So I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I have two different points I wanted to point out.
Sure.
One of them is that I feel like the way Blizzard is balancing is that they should be balancing more towards raising the skill cap rather than just changing the Withermite. So in terms of that, I was kind of wondering what you guys... In terms of, like, ZVT, I feel like it would be raising the skill cap by allowing the Zerg to know which units would be targeted by the Withermite in order, so they can, like, split in terms of... What Terran does with
you mean,
Marines, right?
You mean like similar to like the Hunter Seeker missile?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe like a little target. So as the Zerglings or Banelings are going in, you can see which ones are being targeted and then split. And then seeing like really sick splits in terms of like mechanics that way.
Sure.
Like, what do you guys think about that?
You know, I seem to recall we talked about this before. Suppy, do you remember us having that? I think it kind of came to the conclusion that it was almost like too fast of a activation that.
What was the
Widowmine, like similar to
seeing
like
what the Widowmine's going to hit.
Yeah, like turning the unit red, similar to like a Hunter Seeker missile.
I think you can sort of react. It is really fast, but it would help like. Sometimes you run a pack over, and then sometimes I'll split, like, one Ling off, and then it'll just shoot, like, my entire group of Lings. So it's, like, I would have more time to at least split, like, that giant group into, like, two groups or something before it died. So it would be a little useful. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, the Hunter Seeker missile, like, sits there and spins and, like, revs up. It's like, oh, shit, red unit. Like, I'm going to get that guy the fuck out of there. Whereas, like, it would seem almost like, well, why not activate it, right? Because you have to have some pretty fucking ridiculously awesome control and reaction to be able to carve away one Ling. the one that happens to get targeted in that amount of time.
Yeah.
I kind of like the randomness of it, too, to be honest with you, too, because sometimes the Widowmine shoots a really stupid nothing. But then other times the Widowmine hits that money shot where you start to question whether or not this game is out to get you, you know, where it like hits. It's like your probes are just getting away and you're like, surely they're safe now. And then the Widowmine just 10 probes are gone. And you're like, I don't know. I'm pretty okay with it as it is.
I actually really agree with that, too. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. What was your other point?
I was kind of looking at, like, thinking of the mules and also how to, like, raise the skill cap. And, like, with mules not having any cooldown at all, it allows Terrans to just save the energy, and then if they don't have to make the decision of standing, they just drop all their mules. Well, especially in the late game where, I don't think it's, like, it's not imbalanced, but if a Terran can achieve or gain a base for a minute and a half and be able to drop all the mules on it without any cooldown at all, how does that compare to something like Zerg or Protoss where they can't...
I'm gonna be honest with you, man. Like, democracy. This one is, like, debating whether or not democracy or communism is better for the United States. Like, there's merits, there's pros and cons to either one. You could have the best argument in the entire planet, but it's never going to change. So I don't know that it's even worth talking about or you spending any time thinking about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Honestly, if it does, it's going to be StarCraft 3. It's just too much. It's too instilled to change. But we do appreciate your call, man. Thank you so much. Have a good night, man.
Thank you.
I give you props for just. It's like
I'm in a no nonsense mood, Wheat.
Be like, what if we just got rid of Corona Boost? Well.
Right. Dude, Conan, are you watching Revival vs. Bolt right now?
I'm watching out of the corner of my eyes. Okay, we got area code 701. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello, I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
And, hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, I'm a big fan, and I was listening to the caster's conversation, and when I first started watching the game, I would be watching a cast or something, and, you know, one of the casters would be, you know, good force fields, or that was a great battle by so-and-so. So maybe, like, I was just thinking what your guys' opinions are is, you know, at the end of a game, at the end of a match, you know, go down to a sequence where a really big battle or, you know, a good storm went down and explain to the audience of why that was a good force field, why was that a good... you know, a storm or something, for example.
Right. I mean, we've definitely seen, like, replays, I think, just in all esports over the last 3 years. Like, they've been popping up more. The analysis desk is now the hot new thing in all of esports, where after the game it goes to that. And I do think that, you know, that's a great place for a lot of that stuff. I don't know what the rest of you guys think. I love the sort of thought on the analysis desk. I mean, I certainly believe that there's still a lot of room inside CAS to talk about it. You know, we often talk about, like, how the first 5 minutes of the game can oftentimes be the dullest part of the game. And it can be, but maybe that's when we're spilling over and gushing about the unbelievable micro that we saw in the previous game or something like that. Like, there is certainly a flow that I think attributes to what Rhett was talking about. And I'd love to hear, you know, what you guys think about that. Because I do feel like a lot of organizations have been using the analyst desk / replay highly effectively.
Lebo? Suppy?
I think, like, they could, like, the first 5 minutes of the game could really be utilized. That's, like, when a lot of people, like, tune out because they just have really low attention span. So, like, having extra content like that where they show, like, a popular play made by this person or maybe what they did last game would be, like, really important. But, I don't know. I feel like also something they could do in terms of content is, like, have, like, what their thoughts on the other player is and have a video of that playing in the beginning. But I feel like most SE2 plays in general that are actually, like, fun to watch, like, a big storm, like, explains itself. But I don't know. That's the only thing.
I would like to see more implications of a big storm or a big force field. The implications following it. For example, after a big engagement, talk about what the positions of each player is like afterwards. For example, like you could be like, this is a really critical fight. If he wins this fight, he's going to have map control, and this map control is going to like give him the advantage to get give him the opportunity to get an economic advantage by taking another base or something like that. But if he loses this battle, he's going to be pushed back and contained, blah, blah, blah. So that force field was really crucial or something in turning the tide of the battle. Just like more description of like the actual impact and effects that we see from, you know, something as small as a force field.
Yeah, I would just combine what you just said with what Wheat was saying, which is just that people can still work on their commentaries and should look at it. And I don't think there's any one answer. Like, I don't necessarily agree that you should never say that was a great force field or a great storm and just leave it at that, because sometimes there's other things to talk about. Or, like Lebo said, it is self-explanatory. But I think people should be looking for opportunities on ways to improve their commentary, and then I think Seppi's advice is really good in that regard. So I just like that there's discourse and discussion on it, because I think there's more to be offered to our broadcast.
All right, caller, thank you very much for your call. Take care.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Yep, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentlemen.
That guy kind of sounded like Goatless, you know? Like, kind of?
No. Without the accent.
What the fuck is wrong with you, Lebo?
Just a little bit like that, man.
How could that have sounded like Goatless? He didn't say fuck.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah?
Fucking A?
Hear him say fuck at all, Zeno?
Rolled a dune buggy.
Don't think so.
Well, no one can be Goatless, man.
Goatless is calling now. It's too early, Goatless. We've got to take another call.
He's excited.
Area code 515, hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Yeah, hey. So, first of all, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, so, I guess my main question is, you know, as an up-and-coming player, or like that's what I view myself as, and I'm from the Midwest, 515, you know, Iowa, so there's nothing here in terms of tournaments or whatever. Okay, there's like no esports in the Midwest, so I find myself with like a huge lack of opportunity to like show myself, and I was wondering what your guys' opinions are on like advice for avenues of up and coming players to strive towards. And I don't really want to hear winning a major tournament or doing well in WCS, because as you guys well know, Koreans have already got the lockdown on both of those. So, with that being said, go ahead.
Okay. In Control just returned. In Control, we have an upcoming player from the Midwest who's actually asking about getting his name out, aside from, say, the obvious accomplishments of, you know, winning a major tournament. And I feel your pain, actually. You know, this show's broadcast out of the Midwest, so... you know, I definitely, every time there's like a little small bar craft or I hear about a LAN, like I try to jump on it. But of course, these are all small things. They're not necessarily going to be what you are looking for. Have you been to any major events?
No. Like I haven't really felt like my skill has been up to par until recently, because I wasn't a Brood War player myself. Okay. So I've had to work to catch up, you know? Okay.
I can address this one, because I'm kind of an up-and-coming player, so I think, like, the thing is, you as an up-and-coming player, you have to really think on, like, the global scope of things, like what your goals are as a player. And so I talked to Jadong about this, actually. It's kind of like, you say that, like, the foreigners, like, can't compete in WCS and stuff, but, like, really, in the WCS Challenger qualifiers right now, like, the only Koreans that are in there are, like, B-team Koreans, like, if you want to actually become, like, somebody in the scene, like, even anybody, like, a Challenger League player, you need to be able to, like, have enough motivation for yourself to be able to beat those players. Like, I don't think any esport right now has, like, tons of, like, local lands for, like, $100 or something like that. Like, in StarCraft 2, I actually think it's really good to have, like, something like WCS Challenger Qualifiers that I can, like, basically practice all day and be like, this is something that I need to get, like, it's a priority for me as a player. I mean, I don't think, like, in some other sports, esports, there's, like, not even anything like that. So you kind of just have to take it. I don't know.
So,
like, I don't know.
A couple ideas. And they're not super revolutionary. You had said you know about winning tournaments and stuff like that, and WCS, of course. Those are the things we all strive for, and that's nigh impossible, as you said. Do the best you can to get as high as you absolutely can on the GM ladder if you are truly looking to make money out of this and get your name out. If you're like, well, I'm top 10 masters, forget about it. If you're bottom 100 GM, probably forget about it. Certainly you build on these things. Like, those aren't, you know, that doesn't mean you quit. It just means that from that point, you look to the stars and try to get higher. You need to be an impressive GM rank on the North American ladder to get any attention at all, because it's recognized as the easiest ladder. So if you're number 108 and you have a 500 record, then next season you're striving to hit top 50 with a 60% record. Like, you got to build on that. And then from that point in time, you then have to join one of these teams that has, like, really cool kind of grassroots. Like, obviously you'd be like, well, I'd love to join Complexity or Quantic. That's probably not realistic, but or EG, right. But perhaps you can get on, like, a Clarity, or you can get into that Root their academy. You start getting more attention from those guys. That's kind of that's the ladder in competitive and professional gaming. You don't just jump to the top unless something outrageous happens, like for Scarlet. So you got to do those things. But from the very beginning, and this is one of my, like, soapboxes, start streaming now. Start tweeting now. Make a YouTube now. And you're going to be streaming to 15 people, or 5, or 3. And you're going to be tweeting at nobody. But eventually those things build. And when you do get to a point where you're like, someone's like, hey, we'd like to sign you up. We're going to pay you $15 a month, and we're going to travel you to one tournament in 10 years. And you're like, well, that's, you know, the better offer that I have now. You're going to want to have that social media that you started months or a year ago, that you've been building up to this point where it starts to have the ability to reach more people. You don't want to get popular and then start your social media. You want to start your social media, hopefully get popular, and then have that to go back to. So start doing it now.
I really, really like Jeff's tips. And I think there's a lot of good examples, but it really is a step-by-step process. For example, Kane was a person who just slowly got better and better on ladder. Every season got better and better. He started joining these small teams. So you can start joining some of these smaller teams that compete in team leagues together, just so you have experience facing other teams. And then as you just continue rising the ranks, you eventually get on a team like Root, like Kane did. Or for me, I started on a team called VP Gamers, and I was getting paid. I got like $5 for a clan war match win, and that's what I was playing for. And it was like huge for me. And then I joined Check 6, which was a little bit better, and, you know, continued going up. And after that, I joined EG. So I would say that your number one priority right now should be getting higher on ladder, because that's where people are going to see you. And then after that, all the other tips that Jeff mentioned, definitely what you should be doing.
All right, cool. Thanks. I guess I wanted to do a shout out to my clan, OD. And thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, if you don't mind me asking, where from Iowa are you from?
I'm from Urbandale, which is a suburb of Des Moines.
Okay, right on.
Yep. Right on.
Midwest represent, dude. Keep at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Good luck.
All right, thanks,
guys. Take care. Later. Bye. All right.
The band Slipknot once named one of their albums Iowa. And when they were asked why, it's because they said it's the worst place they could think of on Earth. So they named their album Iowa.
I wonder if those dick fucks had actually ever been to that state before.
They're from that state, Mr. Weed.
Why?
What story was a trap to see whether or not you like Slipknot, and now I know!
I don't particularly have any sort of affinity towards Slipknot, and also, how could they possibly call Iowa, which is like one of the
have
last...
Have they been to Nebraska? What? Do they know how shitty Nebraska is?
No, Nebraska's not shitty at all, man. Nebraska's like fucking top 10 state, no doubt. You guys just have no idea.
God.
No, fucking seriously. Like, y'all just don't know. I'm telling
what
you.
What's the worst state?
I don't know. Well, you said in the world.
Well, I mean...
Right? Like, I could we could come up with a few shitty places to live. You know, I'm sure they're not like, yeah, man, fuck Iowa. That's why I'm taking up permanent residency in North Korea, bitch. It's like, okay, right. Slipknot, you're cool now. You're cool
now. You're fluffing out of this, though, Weed. I'm asking you to call out a state, man.
Okay.
No, there's going to be that one viewer in chat who's like from there.
He's going to lose 10 Twitter followers after he says what he's
I'm
about.
I'm trying to think of the state that reminds me of France the most. I can't think of anyone. I've never, you know, I mean, yeah, I can't think of one, man. I guess I'm just too
it
America.
Must be Nebraska.
I'm just too
it must
America.
Be Nebraska.
No, it's not Nebraska. It's like Nebraska's Nebraska. Legit. I might actually say California for as much as I love that place.
What the fuck? Well, now we know how serious to take you. What?
Dude, hold on. I love Cali. Don't get me wrong. But I fucking Sounds hate like Cali it. At the same time. Like, you know what I'm saying? I love that place, but I fucking hate that place. So. All
right.
It's a good relationship we got, me and Cali. All right, let's take it. It's time. The one, the only, his weekly call here on Inside the Game. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Gentleman Goatlust. Hello.
Hey, g'day, gents. How are we?
Good day. I am fucking fantastic. Fantastic.
Fucking brilliant, mate.
It is brilliant. What's fucking up, man? Brilliant. What you got for us, Goatlust?
You like the Australian?
Oh, yeah.
What do you got?
Yeah. So, I think I heard, might have been on this show, might have been somewhere else, someone mentioned that, you know, despite the NA ladder being shit, you know, North America's actually got the stronger WCS region than Europe, and it sort of got me thinking, if you guys think the higher sort of competitive level of the American WCS is going to positively affect the ladder and the region as a whole under the current system, or do you feel like future changes to the WCS system are going to bring positive change to the North American region, or do you think that, you know, the NA ladder's just fucked and there's, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, players won't play there and then it's not going to get better?
Can I just want to throw something out here, because fucking first off, great question, Goatlust, right? So I had a talk with Kim Fawn, and I have no problem, like, to, you know, discussing what I, you know, what I talked to there. I mean, like, she basically reached out. She's like, I want to talk. I just want to hear your thoughts on WCS. Like, mm-hmm. Unload on me. Dump. Let me hear what you got to say. And I was like, you know, here's something that I think that is really fucking dumb, Kim. I go, Kim, I think that it makes no sense that you have a competition based around a ladder, but that's not an acceptable way to get into WCS. That actually makes zero sense to me, because you know what? Like, how many guys, like the dude that called, would grind out games if he actually had the chance to bust his way up, maybe hit that one spot, then, you know, a tournament happens? But that seems like a no-brainer to me. To somehow utilize the ladder from every region and make that feed into WCS. Is it going to be an alternate route? Yes. Is it going to be an easier route? Might be. Might be a little bit more risky, too. But I do think that it's a viable thing to add on to it. I think that that would promote games on the ladder. I would love to hear you guys' thoughts on that.
That's like the sickest idea, man. Oh, if we could, like, the biggest problem with WCS America right now is that the Koreans are playing in America, but they're not helping, like, anybody get any better. They're just, like, taking our jobs, right? So if we could have them, like, get on ladder and then play with us, like, the American scene right now, it's not like we're just so far behind Korea. We just need, like, a little bit of a boost so that we don't want to dodge Koreans completely. Like, we want to play Koreans. It's just, like, we're, like, a little bit, like, not that good right now. So like, if we could practice with them, get experience with them, and like, as long as you're playing better players, obviously you'll improve. Like, that'll help a lot. Like, yeah,
it's tough because incentive to increase the region by having them play on the ladder is tremendously needed, and it's there, and that would be awesome. And that's us all thinking. That's us thinking with portals. That's us thinking positively and really happy, and that sounds good. Now, think of me as the wizened old, gray-bushed, scarred-up veteran from an era where you did qualify on ladders for leagues. And these leagues were those fucking leagues that you needed to exist, like WCG and some of these other leagues. And if you did, like, they literally be like, top 10, you're going to the league. So what would happen is the league, the ladder, excuse me, became, how do I put this without being too vulgar for the young Lebo? I don't, it was like watching, it was like watching the raunchiest, dirtiest, most, you didn't think it possible, but you knew the internet could produce kind of porn that was ever conceived. We're talking Japanese eel porn involving bears.
Oh, and my God.
I mean, like, the hackers, the people that would trade wins, and then the people that you didn't think would hack, but then did hack because they needed to qualify. The ladder is not monitored in a way that is conducive to fair play for things that actually matter. And when you put that on the line, and you put that online on the ladder, you're going to get some of the most disturbing amounts of horseshit that you've ever, you never thought possible. You just didn't think it was possible to see this. And that's what scares me. So what I like about the WCS system is that it has offline components. And it has qualification that is online, which does suck because you will run into that. But because it's not opening it to the mass public that is the ladder, there's less that going on. So the best world would be to have those Koreans playing on our server so that we could practice with them, so that we could raise the skill cap of our server, but not also then make it so that there is still those people that don't give a fuck that will cheat out people that need this for their livelihood, and they just some men want to see the world burn, and they're on the ladder. Those men are on the fucking ladder right now.
But I think it's not going to be something where we're completely stopping the regular qualifiers. It's just
right.
going to be a couple of spots to ladder.
Right.
And I have to bring up a counterexample to your point, which I do know what you're talking about. For example, when we were talking about TSL qualifiers, for example, people cheated a lot. Back when people were qualifying for TSL and Brood War, they win traded, stuff like that, and they got disqualified, stuff like that. But I feel like a really good counterexample is when Shoutcraft America happened and the top 16 ladder spots went to or qualified you for it. Ladder during those times was A, extremely active, and B, a lot more competitive than normal. And I felt like it really, really increased the quality of the NA ladder. And I feel like that could be a good thing. I mean, just having a couple slots maybe from the ladder that would go to the quality.
They announced that mid ladder season. So I agree with you. It was nice. But if you have this as like if Blizzard says in the 2014 season, jump on those ladder points because now the top 16 of you are gonna win $1,000 in a paid trip to an offline regional final where you'll get a hotel room in Los Angeles. There are 13 and 14-year-old children out there with access to things that will make the ladder. It's not like it's going to be 90% corrupt and terrible, but it'll be enough so that we'll have those stories of guys who were like number 17, 18, and 19 who got fucked.
I think that's I know
it's
a problem.
I hate the position I'm in because I'm in the pessimist position.
No, I understand.
Like, Jeff, dream. Jeff,
yeah, no,
the ladder's not bad. It's
but
great,
you know what?
Jeff,
like, I feel like it's actually shittier to be like, yeah, well, then let's not do it. Fuck
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm
yeah.
in that position.
Right.
I'm
I get it, right?
There.
Like, I would rather that they do it and Blizzard be like, yo, we're going to fucking ban people. Like nobody's business, you know.
Dude, that's
like,
what they, well, for
ban people.
Okay, but not for Shoutcraft America. A lot of people were disqualified because they, like, there was it was 1 through 16, but it ended up being like 1 through 28 because some of them weren't from America, and then other people had been caught like doing like sharing an account with someone,
right?
So they were disqualified. So because Blizzard checked the IPs
yeah.
or something.
That stuff will happen.
I mean, it's like impossible. the chat. Don't paint this picture in your head like you feel like they're going to go buy another $60 fucking copy of Heart of the Swarm and somehow grind their way up the ladder to hit that fucking spot again. I don't really see that. I mean, it would have to come with the implications that we are going to take a firmer stance on this. Like, I agree. Like, with adding that as a way to go in, it also means, like, we have to be much more stern on you know,
if they coupled it with that promise, and if they monitored more actively and didn't ban periodically every 3 months, which again, we don't need to talk about that, but I think we can agree that if there's actual things on the line for the ladder, and they made the ladder more legitimate and they actively policed it, then that would be one of the better answers for an otherwise a problem that we have. Right, we have Koreans right now playing one weekend, qualifying, playing their matches online, so we're all making excuses for every time they lose, but when they win, we're just like, well, they're Koreans. So it's like bad either way, win or lose. And then they come into the finals, and they curb stomp everybody and just take the victory, and we're all like, yep, they're Korean, that's what they do. It's not a great situation, so it does deserve work. So if the answer is a more policed ladder where you have to play on a ladder to qualify, and that raises the skill cap, and that increases the amount of times we're practicing with Koreans, and maybe the amount of Koreans that then move over here to be a part of this system, that'd be pretty cool.
One part of Goatless's question that I wanted to address is whether or not the NA ladder, the quality of it, is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and I really think it is, because you hear a player, like even Lebo mentioned earlier today on the show, that he doesn't play NA ladder anymore, and we're seeing that more and more. Ghost User left, Kane's leaving, so many players solely play on Korea. Polt lives in America, but he's never played on North American ladder. For the past 4 months or whatever, he hasn't played a single game on North American ladder. So it's not like he's contributing to the North American ladder scene. It's getting to the point where like it's just like a max exodus, and like so many top players that used to play on the North American ladder don't even play there anymore, even if they are from America. So it really is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I hope good changes do come. I heard they are doing revamps for WCS 2014, at least trying to figure out new things that they can try, new suggestions, ideas. They're having like meetings or something. So hopefully things will start looking better in 2014.
I agree.
I mean, I guarantee you, though, if they do something like ladder incentives, like everybody will come back. Like, I mean, Kane's already left. I play against him on EU like now, even though he's still in North America, I believe. So, but I know a lot of people that have left, but I guarantee you all of them will come back if we have another ShotKraft America. It's just, like, there's just really no incentive to play ladder right now on North America. Mm-hmm. It's a shame.
Well, hopefully one day there will be.
Yep, hopefully it works itself out.
Yep. Goatlust, yep. As always, thank you for your call, dude.
Yep, as always, thanks for having me around, gentlemen. Catch you guys later.
Take care.
Thank you.
Peace. And that was Gentleman Goatlust.
Gentleman Goatlust.
I feel like he calls, asks a question, and then like he puts down the phone. Or, you know, or, I don't
drops
know, a headset. And he just, like, walks out, goes and kills, like, snakes with a knife. And then comes back. Gentlemen, good night. And then he goes back to being a fucking badass. International badass. Goatlust. I love it. All right, you guys. Good show today. Good discussion. I think you made the right decision there, Jeff. Obviously, I'm watching. Polt has bounced back from no internet in Austin and has just won a game. I think he's going on to wait, was that? That was just the first
loser. Loser.
Yeah,
match.
He lost. Yeah. So Polt now faces Hyun, right? Did Sage win that winner match?
Actually,
no, Sage or Hyun. I think
one of them does, guys.
Yeah.
It was Sage. Sage. Sage.
Sage.
Polt's gonna play Sage.
So, what's wrong? Xenocider, why don't you start?
Gentlemen, Xenocider.
All right. Well, first I'd like to lead off with, this is a satirical story, but today I was talking with a girl that I really liked, and I asked her out, and she just said, you know, if you had like 100 more Twitter followers, I would go out with you. And you know what? It's a shame. And I see there's like 3,000 people that are watching this right now. So if you want Lebo to be a handsome stud that also gets women, please
Lebo,
follow me on Twitter.com.
I feel like there's an important lesson to be learned here, and if I'm the one that has to teach you it, that's fine. It's not the size of your Twitter followers that matters. It's how you use it. Okay?
So she would prefer you have like 2,400 followers. Is that
Well, I think she was going for 10,000, but I'll settle for 2,500.
Okay. Awesome. All right. I'm already following you, so I can't help you out, apparently. Yeah. I am sorry about that. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's it.
Fantastic work, son. Fantastic work. Gentlemen Suppy.
Thank you, gentlemen, DJ Wheat. And everybody needs to help out gentlemen Xenocider. I'm going to be on Twitter at EG Suppy. I also need them followers to get girlfriends, so please give me some followers. What else is going on? I got the CSL like match, All-Stars match or whatever tonight in 50 minutes. So if you want to tune in and watch me, I play Saravati. He's really good. I've been losing to him in practice. So nice. We'll see. And I think that's about it. Thanks for watching once again. Thank you to all of our sponsors and Team Evil Geniuses. We got Razer, Monster Energy, Kingston HyperX, Astro, Need for Seat, Jinx, Intel Extreme Boards,
XMG, Zam.
Thank you for all of those sponsors for making this possible. And on to you, Gentleman Jeff.
Well, thank you, Gentleman Suppy. I too would like to echo his sentiments and thanks to our team and our sponsors. One quick thing to speak to that a lot of people have been asking about and are very anxious of is the Pizza GG stuff. I typed this up on Reddit, and I'm just very quickly learning that I need to not post anything meaningful there that may or may not be agreed with or disagreed with, because it's just not the forum for that. There's too many people speaking into it and confusing the message. The very bottom line is that this is unacceptably late, but we at EG don't believe in, like, closing our doors or fining ourselves or something when we do something wrong. We believe in doing what we can to rectify that and apologizing for the mistakes that we will and have and do make. And that is not doing these tiers in a timely fashion. So what I can tell you from my end that I do know that is happening is I've been getting message from my manager and from EG about what my availability is and what Team Liquid's availability is. I've actually already seen a couple of graphics that were made by Team Liquid for when I transform into Team Liquid in control. So there's things being done, and it's being worked on. I wish I could tell you a date that it starts, but I don't have that, and it's not for me to decide. So they're still working on it, but the best I can tell you is that you will have TL in control versus EG TLO captaining the other squads in a show match. And I also know that our League of Legends guys are flying into the office to film a music video. And then that will conclude the tier. So it's being worked on. It's being done. It's really late. And if that really pisses you off and really upsets you, that's totally understandable. And I think that that's very fine because it is really late. But I would just ask that instead of like threatening to kill or messaging people about how terrible they are and how bad they are at their job or telling them they should be fired and stuff like that because you would have been fired at your real-life job, that doesn't help anyone, and it's just not going to do any good. So please try to refrain from that. But if, like, in the future, we offer you a 50% pizza with the promise of tears, and you're like, fuck your pizza, I don't want it, okay, I understand. That would be more fair if you wanted to go that route. But it's being worked on. So that's the word I wanted to put out there. If you guys could do me a favor, when this comes up, say in control so that it's being worked on or something like that, that'd be nice. And in the just general message that I'm trying to put out there is that when people mess up and do things wrong, kind of like when Root didn't produce content within the 2 months of going into their house, that's not good and that's bad. And you guys should speak about that. And you should make threads where you say, this is unacceptable, this is moving too slow. Those people, I'm not really speaking to you because that's absolutely within your rights and that's how the real world works and that's how our world works and that's fine. But I am speaking to the people that literally email and message and just get mean. They just message to hurt. We don't need that in our community. That's the negativity I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the people that are not okay with bad things. I'm talking about the people that are not okay and then try to fucking hurt people with words, messages, with threats. It's just not good. And those people are out there, and they are the minority, but unfortunately they get a lot of the attention because they say the worst things. So downvote them, tell them to stop, delete them. If you're a moderator, fucking ban them. Like, just let's try to improve our community by being aware of the issues, but not handling them like children with sticks. Like, it's just not good to do. So that's what I'm asking. Thank you guys for tuning in. I might stream tonight. I might not, because it's getting kind of late. But you can see more of me throughout the week streaming. And then Sunday, I'll be on my D&D show Roleplay. So that's me. Goodbye.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. I just wanted to say like one last thing. We can talk about it next time probably. Is Sundance just posted on Twitter, and he said that any grassroots SE2 event organizers looking for live event space for your finals, get at me. I want to help.
Nice. Yeah. We will definitely be talking about that a little bit. Thank you for that heads up as we get ready to wrap up Inside the Game Episode 84. I don't really have much to say after In Control's speech, except for two things. First off, I've got Live on 3 tomorrow with the infamous Slasher, who has been pissing people off all week, so I'm sure it'll be a great show. And number two, as you can see here, I've got 60,798 followers. And when I get 61,000, I will be able to put in a request for a second wife. So
nice.
I'm only 212 away, guys. I mean, for Christ's sake, help a brother out. And I want to thank our sponsors, Monster Energy, King Sniper, X-Razor, and Astro. Really appreciate you being a part of the One More Game family. Thank you all for tuning in. And thank you, gentlemen. Great show. Appreciate your time. And we'll see you next time on another episode of Inside the Game. We're out of here. Peace.
Peace, gentlemen.
Bye.
By the way, I will be casting some Grand Theft Auto... Casting? I don't think I'll be casting any fucking Grand Theft Auto 5. I will be playing, however, some Grand Theft Auto 5 later on after I put Mini Wheat to sleep. That'll be, you know, in the next hour or so. Over on twitch.tv/DJWheat. Zip them up. Look at my bank account. Peace.